with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's a little bit past, about 3 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That is where you go if you'd like to jump in and participate in the Horn chat room, which is a darn fine little experience on any given evening. Just go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole, Don from Central PA, Dwayne, Hoghead, Jug of Punch, VT Blom, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact decided to use his powers in Fold Space to become Man Cave. Yes, must be a lovely day out in Northern California. Those 15 seconds of winter may be over by now, for all I know. Here in Appalachistan, it was a lovely-ish day. Cool, but not cold. Blue skies and high skating clouds. Yeah, really couldn't ask for much more. Just lovely. Lovely. Simply lovely. So, not a lot to complain about. I mean, apart from the fact that, you know, Carrie Fisher died today. And 2016 is proving to be quite the butcher. So, we've got Titanic Tuesday to deal with, because it is, in fact, the 27th day of December, 2016. And that means that it's a Tuesday. And on Tuesdays, we celebrate Titanic right-wing intellect. Yes, we absolutely do. Titanic right-wing intellect, it goes back to a long time ago when our buddy Jim heard the right-wing blatherer over in Beckley take a break, America's most profound monotone, I might add, heard him take a break from reading the newspaper to his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, and instead, he took a call from one of those aforementioned mouth breathers and knuckle walkers. Knuckle walkers and mouth breathers. Knuckle breathers and mouth walkers. Yes. He took a break from that to take a call, and the aforementioned said, "Steve, how come you reckon it is that there's seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowheres near the ocean." To which he replied in that stentorian monotone, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yeah, Titanic plates. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic little round Dutch pancake pan. No, sorry. Big table, that Titanic. Yeah, right. And so it's things like that that we celebrate on Titanic Tuesday. And God knows we've got a lot of it. I should probably remind us all, because I'm about to forget to do it, that this is a listener-supported broadcast operation. We don't sell ads here. We don't have any ads for vacuum cleaners that can pick up a Swedish bowling ball or meatball for that matter, or any wave radios or liquidated floors or generally steel buildings or, you know, all the herbal erection remedies and hair regrowth tonics. And buy gold now. There'll never be a better time to buy gold, you rubes. None of that. None of that here. So you don't have to, we don't have to, A, break up the train of thought. We don't have to tell callers to, wait, we're going to put you on hold, caller, and then we'll come back and talk about me some more. We don't do that either. So, consequently, we have conversation radio, but only because you choose to support it. And there's a tab over at headonradionetwork.com, and it says contribute. And if you click that, and if you, for instance, want to become a monthly subscriber, of which we are quite short this time of year, or this time of the month, rather, if you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, just click that, check that one little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. Barring that, however, anything helps. Everything helps. And so, you know, 5, 10, 15, oh, Mr. Soros, Mr. DiCaprio. No, who am I kidding? We just try to raise 200 bucks unless we've got a shortfall, and we did last night. We pulled up $83 short, but thanks to our subscribers, Karen, among others. We had two subscribers last night. We don't have, you know, that $83 to raise. No, in point of fact. Thanks to Karen in California. We have $73 to raise, which is well, you can never adequately state how important it is. But thank you very kindly to Karen, and thank you to Arnold, and thank you to Richard. Or, I'm sorry, thank you to Karen and Arnold. And that means, we had $68 to raise, which takes, it means we've got 268 bucks to raise this evening. 268. One at 268, two at 134, four at 72, eight at 36. Oh dear, the ciphering's hell on wheels. 16. No. My head's beginning to hurt, but you get the idea. So that's where fundraising stands. If you want to help out, PayPal is the quickest and easiest way, but some people don't like PayPal. Some people prefer the U.S. Postal Service, which does deliver to our little mailbox that we share at a UPS store. We don't share the same mailbox, but at different numbers. But, you know, the Klan also goes there to get their mail. Mm-hmm. That's why Boss Man Wayne always takes a nice old axe handle with him in case he runs into the gland Kleagle or whatever. Right. And that mailing address, by the way, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 258. 01. If you want to participate that way and you send me a note, I'll tell Boss Man Wayne and he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck, and that way he's got two hands wrapped around that axe handle just in case the gland Kleagle shows up. Right. So all that having been said, we'll hope to raise 268 bucks this evening and cross our fingers between now and the end of the program. So, what do we have in the way of Titanic Tuesday? Well, we've got a Titanic Tuesday update, among other things. courtesy of Brother Deacon Gerald, chairman of the Cathedral of Common Sense Building and Grounds Committee. Gerald points out that we did have some good news today. Titanic intellect Pam Taylor. Remember Pam Taylor? Remember, here, this'll bring Pam Taylor to mind. A ape in heels. I will be so glad to see Michelle Obama go away, and I will be so glad to see a classy lady like Melanoma Trump be the first lady, because I'm sick of that of having a ape in heels in the White House. That Pam Taylor, remember her? More than 200,000 people signed a petition calling for her to be fired after that filthy little bit of ignorant hillbilly racism that she engaged in. Mm-hmm. And she almost snuck back into her job. They were all set to give her her cushy little $80,000 a year, $80,000, $80,000 a year job back to her along about December 23rd when journalism caught up and kept her from getting it. She will not be returned as director of the Clay Development Corporation. Instead, the position has apparently, according to Gerald, been eliminated, and the Appalachian Area Agency on Aging will now manage the corporation. So, as Gerald says, she utilized her freedom of speech and drew attention to the pork job that she had that wasn't actually needed. You may recall that the job she was in had been created and called for somebody with a bachelor's degree and 10 years of administrative experience in a similar agency. And she said, well, that sounds like me because I done been to cosmetology school. And they hired her. Then the governor's office, as Gerald points out, investigated and, being good stewards of the taxpayers' money, decided to save that $80,000 a year. Had she kept her mouth shut and her head down, she would probably be retired from that little cushy job. But see, that's what Obama derangement syndrome does to people.
Oh, God damn it, Michelle is an ape in heels. I can't wait till we got a hooker for the first lady.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be so nice to have a classy first lady who can say, hey, sailor, in six languages. So, as Jen in Australia points out, you guys really do have a clan problem. Is there any way to solve that? Now, Boss Man Wayne and I talked from time to time about moving the mailbox, just because it seems like a moral and upright thing to do. The problem being that there's no end of pain in the ass things that would happen in terms of, you know, changing the address and getting people accustomed to a new address, all that kind of stuff. Right. So, I don't know. I'll let you know if we decide to do anything. But one less Titanic moran. She can sit around the house and piss and moan about a ape in heels. She just won't be on the state's dime doing it. All right. Note coming in from Scott and Punky. Subject line, Carrie Fisher, etc. et al. One wonders. There is something hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I didn't do that. I don't have Tim handy to remind me to. Carrie Fisher, etc., et al. One wonders, Scott writes, there is something eerie and strange going on. Peruse the long, long list of those who have departed this earthly realm during 2016 so far, and then consider Dick Cheney remains upright and above ground. That just ain't right. Well, he wouldn't be, except for the fact that he sent Renfield out to find him a nice young heart to plant in his chest, Scott. That's the key to that, pretty plainly. I don't know about you, but any time I hear Dick Cheney's name mentioned, I can't help wondering what decent human being had to die. And I'm not talking about the heart donor. What decent human being waiting for a heart died waiting so that Dick Cheney could live on and perpetuate his evil unto yet another day? Right? Yeah. Meanwhile, a member of the fraternity of Steve, writes, subject line, news to abuse. Talk about a juicy topic. Seems the T, otherwise known as Andy Kaufman, is about to appoint his longtime company lawyer to a special negotiator position in his new administration. One of those sleep-on-the-sofa appointments, I imagine, from an idiot who can't be bothered to peruse his top-secret newspaper over coffee and a croissant. Jason Greenblatt, chief legal officer of the Trump Organization, will represent trade deals and other talks, it seems. Kind of vague. The kind of thing, too, perhaps ripe for a grilling session at some point, though I'm sure the man is well-versed in such matters, even when he is taken unawares by a Congress that certainly could never be even remotely interested. Rule of law, indeed. Other talks? Trump Organization? Starting to sound like an old movie set in 1920s Chicago. You like baseball? I like baseball. I guess all we have to do now is wait for the special accountant. You can find it on the MSN page via a Reuters news blurb. So, well, that's going to be fun. But there's this damn stupidity. Well, no, it's not really stupidity, is it? This mean-spirited fascism, there, that's a better word, better phrase. This mean-spirited fascism that continues to roil and boil about as a result of what happened in the UN with the resolution concerning the illegal settlements, the illegal Israeli settlements in occupied Palestinian territory. Well, it really won't go away. In large part because of the Israeli ambassador to the United States, an apparently very nasty, creepy, contentious man named Ron Dormer. Now, because the United Nations actually did what the United Nations is supposed to do, i.e., to wit, call out illegal acts by member nations when they commit them, Israel is having an absolute shit hemorrhage. And they are behaving like fascists. Oh, by the way, that last note was courtesy of Steve in China. And it's really kind of embarrassing to see how the for-profit media handles this sort of thing, i.e., with tender little kid gloves. I haven't heard anyone talking to the Israeli ambassador who says, oh, you're pissed off, are you? Are you really mad about this? Are you mad enough to tear up our $3 billion check that we send you every year and just send it back to us in pieces? Are you that mad, Mr. Ambassador? Oh, no, you're not that mad, are you? Oh, I get it. I see. You're just upset that, for once, an American president, in a teeny tiny, itsy bitsy little microscopic way, is standing up to a bunch of fascist punks. You know, you. Because that's really kind of what it boils down to. You know, 2011, the United States vetoed, on Israel's behalf, a resolution concerning the settlements. Because back then, just as now, the Israelis said,
well, you know, this isn't anything that needs to be sorted out in the United Nations. You know, that place is just a cesspool of anti-Israeli sentiment. I mean, they don't really like us. I mean, all we want to do is make the Palestinians disappear. I mean, goddamn. But this needs to be part of negotiations with the Palestinians that we're trying to kill. So it's an internal matter and none of your damn business. And hey, United States, veto that resolution, would you?
And the Obama administration dutifully said, okie doke, and vetoed the resolution. Now, from 2011 to 2016, having been told, with the world having been told that the matter of the settlements, and you know, that even that is a euphemistic word, the matter of Israel stealing more land from the Palestinians. I mean, it sounds like, oh, well, you know, they're just settlements. It, you know, kind of like what we did here when white folks got to the North American continent. The Pequod people have nothing to worry about from the Puritans. We're just going to build a little settlement here. Yeah. But that's... And so, in absolute bad faith, Israel went forward and did absolutely nothing to try to achieve a two-state solution, which the entire world has said, yeah, that's what ought to happen. Instead, they just kept stealing more Palestinian land. And hey, every year we paid them $3 billion to do it. Now, granted, we paid them that in some instances, several instances, perhaps many instances, in the form of guns and bombs and precision-guided missiles and jet planes and things that they could use to, murder Palestinian babies in their cribs. Which, you know, they did. And so finally, having had it up to his graying eyebrows with the mendacity of a fascist punk like Bibi Netanyahu, now the Israelis are saying that, and these were the words used by Bibi when he called all the ambassadors in to bitch at them on Christmas Day. Not helping the cause a lot there, Beeb. We have ironclad evidence that the United States, the Obama administration, orchestrated this whole thing and then abstained. They did it. Well, if we orchestrated it, why didn't we vote for it? Is it because we're afraid that Israel will nuke us? Is that it? I mean, I heard an interview with Ron Dormer, and he did everything short of calling Obama a schwarze. It was disgusting. And then they made the secret deal. They made a secret deal with Iran. It's going to allow Iran to get a nuclear weapon. And we've already got like 500 of the goddamn things. But we're the only ones here who can have them, damn it. Now, he didn't say the part about having the nuclear weapons. But he did accuse the United States government of negotiating a secret deal with Iran when, in point of fact, lots of different countries were involved in the Iranian negotiations. So it's kind of hard to say that it was a secret deal.
But that's one of the things about fascist pariah states. They become eaten alive by their own paranoia. Happens. And so consequently, they are blustering and throwing a hissy fit. And BB's done everything but flop himself down on the floor and kick his arms and legs and threaten to hold his breath until he turns blue. I don't like talking about Israel. It's a little bitty nothing of a country that exercises far more influence than it proportionately deserves. And somebody always winds up getting pissed off.
Oh, God damn it, it's the only derivative democracy in the middle of...
Fascism is fascism is fascism, and it doesn't matter who's practicing it. And as far as I'm concerned, Israel has sunken deeply into that. And in fact, you can speak more freely about the fascism of Bibi Netanyahu in Israel than you can in the United States. How about that? But I mean, fascism is fascism. I was over looking at my buddy John Fox's Facebook page, and I ran across an article about and I recognized the name. And consequently, I clicked on the article. Because it was about someone that... it was about someone that I had learned of back when... back in the earlier days of the Horn. A journalist by the name of Anthony Lowenstein. Some years back, he wrote a provocative book called My Israel Question. And that, of course, got him called a self-hating Jew. Because anybody who says that anybody who's ever delivered Bibi Netanyahu so much as a cold cup of coffee is a goddamn, you know... self-hating Jew. So, at present, Anthony Lowenstein, who is a journalist from Australia, who's, you know, Jewish, has been living and working in Israel reporting on matters in that country. And the article, by the way, comes from Haaretz. Right pronunciation, wrong pronunciation, don't care. The article notes that his status as an accredited journalist is currently under review by the government press office. Because, among other things, he's asked some tough questions of Israeli government officials. And among other things, he has not been sufficiently critical of and hateful toward the BDS movement. On December 12th, he asked Yesh Atid leader Yair Lapid, a question after Mr. Lapid said that the Palestinians were to blame for the stalled peace process. I mean, we keep killing them and stuff, and they won't come to the table. He asked them, this is the quote. You talked before about the idea that since Oslo, Israel has done little or nothing wrong, but the truth is that 2017 is the 50th anniversary of the occupation. There are now 600,000 to 800,000 settlers, all of whom are regarded by international law as illegal. Is there not a deluded idea here that many Israeli politicians, including yourself, continue to believe that one can talk to the world about democracy, freedom, and human rights while denying those things to millions of Palestinians? And will there not come a time soon where you and other politicians will be treated like South African politicians during apartheid? Naturally, Israeli government dude did not answer it. Answer the question, instead attacking Mr. Lowenstein as his questions were presumptions, not facts. Because, see, it's a presumption that those 600,000 to 800,000 settlers on stolen land in Palestine, those aren't really settlers. Those are presumptions. So now, Anthony Lowenstein, his status as a working journalist in Israel is under threat because of a right-wing so-called media watchdog and advocacy group called Honest Reporting under the guidance of a managing editor named Simon Plosker has come after him demanding that the government press office yank his credentials and force him to leave Israel. Because, see, I guess if you talk to the BDS movement, or if you're supportive of the BDS movement, well, you know, that free speech democracy thing they've got going in Israel only goes so far, right? Yep, right. And the nations of the earth, Great Britain, France, Germany, China, Russia, members of the Security Council, don't have a right to vote their consciences about what's being done to land that was set aside by an agreement as Palestinian land. What a filthy, bloody mess. Ron in Raleigh says, keep on going on like that, Bob, and some AIPAC member will call you an anti-Semite. Well, they can try, but it'll be a goddamn lie. There's a big damn difference between criticizing a fascist government and, say, oh, hatred based on someone's birth. You know, like up in Whitefish, Montana. Where the neo-Nazis are going to march in an attempt to intimidate and threaten people for having the unmitigated temerity of being, you know, Jewish. But I get your point, Ron. Oh, and by the way, speaking of neo-Nazis, since it is Titanic Tuesday, Richard Spencer. You remember Richard Spencer, the young guy with the Nazi haircut, 40-ish, proud son of Harvard. Is going after a professor at Drexel University in Philly. Because a professor there has gotten in hot water with the university because of a satirical tweet on Sunday. I mean, yeah. Now, goddammit, incoming President Andy Kaufman, now he can tweet whatever madness he wants to. But if you're a professor at Drexel University, by God, there's a higher standard. Among Professor George Ciccariello Marr, mayor, tweeted out that line on Sunday, "All I want for Christmas is white genocide," which nobody in their right mind tweets, and Professor Ciccariello Mayer is no member of the alt-white or the neo-Nazis or any of that foolishness. Not by a long shot. He was interviewed by the Drexel University student newspaper yesterday, or for publication yesterday, and he explained that white genocide is a figment of the racist imagination and an imaginary concept, and that he found it, you know, a ripe target for derision. He said, "For those who haven't bothered to do their research, white genocide is an idea invented by white supremacists and used to denounce everything from interracial relationships to multicultural policies. It is a figment of the racist imagination. It should be mocked, and I'm glad to have mocked it." Now, meanwhile, Drexel University had an absolute pearl-clutching, hand-wringing frenzy. He said, "What's most unfortunate is that this statement amounts to caving to the truly reprehensible movements and organizations that I was critiquing." Andrew Anglin, the guy who wants the armed march through Whitefish, Montana, said, "We are blocked now with power. Institutions respond to us. A year ago, this same university wouldn't have blinked before responding to complaints with a generic 'We support the free expression of our teachers' blurb,' and not a statement on their own site. It would just be a statement to media. This is what winning looks like, people. You'd better get used to it." Fascism is on the ascendant in the United States of America. Because, as much as I hate to admit it, there is some truth in what that filthy little Nazi has to say. It is being normalized here. Minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, week by week, and now month by month. Now, this is, you know, these are the same people who say, "America belongs to white men." By the way, Professor Ciccariello Marr has been the recipient of any number of death threats from fascists, neo-Nazis, Klansmen, the like. You know, Trump voters. He told the Drexel student newspaper, "White supremacy is on the rise, and we must fight it by any means. In that fight, universities will need to choose whether they are on the side of free expression and academic debate or on the side of the racist mob." Sad little publicity prostitute that he is, Richard Spencer responded by saying, "Anyone at Drexel able to bring me to speak to the student body? Contact me." Pitiful little attention whore. But what do you want to bet? He'll show up and speak at Drexel University.
You know, because we've got to present the controversy. Both sides need to be heard. I mean, everybody has something valuable. You know, we've got to have balance.
And we're not even to... Ah, Jesus. We're not even to January yet. That's disturbing. And I understand why Jen in Australia wants to maybe go off to Italy with Arthur and his wife to try to find capable treatment for him. I understand all too well. Jen noted, by the way, that bitch who longs for an illegal immigrant escort and porn model in the White House won't get her wish. The White House isn't good enough for melanoma. And you want to know what? I'm glad she's staying shacked up in her tacky penthouse. I know this is mean-spirited of me, but I don't want her in our house, and I'm glad she's not going to foul up the place. Sorry, says Jen. I'm in a bad mood. Well, I don't think you're going to get a lot of pushback, Jen. We have no idea what the next 4 to 8 years are going to look like. We can try to imagine it, but we really don't have anything in the way. Magic 8 ball, Ouija board. Oh, and here's a little thing, just a little historical fact. Ron in Raleigh says, remember, hey, Bob, remember when the U.S. was trying to boycott South Africa? Israel was helping those racist sons of bitches try to get a nuke? Why, yes, I'd almost forgotten, but not quite. Not quite. Oh, and just a little follow-up. You know, the Rockettes are going to be performing for Benito Cheeto's inauguration. An anonymous or pseudonymous Rockette who's calling herself Mary has spoken to Mediaite and Marie Claire. And she says that there's a lot of unhappiness among the ranks of the Rockettes over the decision to hire them out. That's the word we'd use, hire, right? Hire them out to the pussy grabber for his inauguration. Mary told Marie Claire. One of the dancers who were part of the Rockettes broke down crying after learning she'd have to dance for Trump. The reason, quote, she felt she was being forced to perform for this monster against her will. And, of course, the Rockettes are known for some rather skimpy costuming, and another dancer said, I wouldn't feel comfortable standing near a man like that in our costumes. But it's kind of Stalinist there, apparently, at the Rockettes, because they're owned, while they have a union, their union doesn't have a whole hell of a lot of oomph behind it. And, of course, the Madison Square Garden Corporation, or whatever it's called, I'm sure is dear old Parcheesi playing buddies with Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. And she says that a lot of the girls, women, I'm so sorry. A lot of the women, a lot of the artistic professionals in the Rockettes won't make a public statement because, quote, they're afraid of losing their jobs if they do. She went on to explain in the Marie Claire story that no women of color in the group have signed up for the inauguration performance because it has been declared to be voluntary. But even that, she said, is problematic because it's almost worse, she noted, to have 18 pretty white girls behind this man who supports so many hate groups. They're going to be branded in history as one of those women. How's it going to look? Well, I'll tell you, here's how it's going to look. It's going to look exactly like Donald Trump wants it to look. And just like racist Bannon wants it to look. And just like Andrew Anglin wants it to look. And just like, oh, so many of those economic anxiety suffering Trump voters want it to look nice and leggy and white. Sound about right to you? Because it does to me. Like I said, it's a busy little Titanic Tuesday. About 12 minutes before the hour, I will note that we have $268 to raise this evening, and we are thus far at zero. So I'll let you know if things change. Oh, let's see. Asa says, I'm not far from where Jen is on the issue of melanoma moving into the White House. However, let us remember she's probably trying to get out of Plugs' greasy little paws, too. No, no, darling, you go to Washington. Country needs you. I will stay here with our precious little child. No, no, go. It will be all right. We have Renfield here to take care of us. Okay, fine, as long as I don't have to watch. Jen says, let fucking Ted Nugent dance for him. Oh, dear. I mean, I understand, but that's just gross. Come on, do it inside your own head. Dancing Ted Nugent. Yeah, see, you won't be okay. That's just awful. What else? Ron in Raleigh points out, you got to understand, Bob, pure evil is a preservative. Dick Cheney, Henry Kissinger, Roger Ailes, et al. See what I mean? Yeah, really, 2016. I think I saw Haley point this out on Facebook or Twitter or somewhere. 2016, little memo. I mean, really? David Bowie, Lemmy? Carrie Fisher? George Michael? Can you not fit Henry fucking Kissinger onto your dance card? It's been a nice long run for him. I mean, he's only got the blood of a few million other human beings just flowing down him all the time, like that scene from Carrie. Please? I know. That was just that's just awful, isn't it? And did you know that one of the events scheduled for the inauguration is the Deplorable? No, really. Alt-white, white supremacist supporters of Hair Trump. Remember, that's H-A-I-R, Trump, Hair Trump. Decided to organize a big party to celebrate the ascendance of American Nazism. And it was all going swimmingly until they got to the issue of how they would go about acknowledging the inauguration of President Kaufman. It all starts with a neo-Nazi by the name of Mike Cernovich, who is apparently a leader in those quarters. He's the organizer behind the Deplorable. Aren't they just precious, clever, little goose-stepping assholes? Deplorable. And then there's another... there's another white-wing Nazi asshole on Twitter who goes by Baked Alaska. Okay? And he's all pissed off because, well, a certain number of the Nazis want to do the Nazi thing. By the way, on Twitter, I guess Baked Alaska has 131,000 followers. Or maybe Cernovich has 131,000 followers. That's a lot of Nazis! Anyway, what they're upset about is... Cernovich told Baked Alaska that Baked Alaska couldn't come to the Deplorable if he was going to give the stiff-armed Nazi salute, as Richard Spencer did earlier. At which point Baked Alaska, whoever that is, started pissing and moaning and saying, you can thank Cernovich for banning me from my own event for tweets. He seems to really care what the media thinks rather than his own. He won't answer why I'm banned, LOL. What a cuck. They love that word. And then the Daily Stormer got involved. Declaring that Mike Cernovich, whom I'm not defending, is a part of the, quote, cuck kike contingent of the Trump movement. And said that Cernovich is still inviting alt-light figures attempting to kike over the alt-right but making it non-racist and accepting of Jews! Wow. What assholes. No, they... Now quit that. They shouldn't call it. They've just got economic anxiety. Right? I mean, that's all it is. Just economic anxiety. And meanwhile, I'm sure I'm sure that racist Bannon is giggling madly away. And the conversations they have to have, like, you know, listen, guys, ixnay on the otsi nay alutse. We're right. We've almost got power. Once we've taken over the government, we can make everybody do them. But don't uck it up, before we get there. Damn it. Shh. Yeah, Jen points out, I know. Every time we lose someone, I think, what's it going to take for Cheney to stop ticking? I wonder if he knows that the longer he puts it off, the more of a fang it's going to become. Speaking of big parties, I may have to take the night off when that happens. Oh, by the way, program note. Now, tomorrow is the 28th of December, of course. And something I'd forgotten to do, but I probably need to do, and am doing right now, is find out when a little certain something is happening. Because it's tomorrow when my beloved Mountaineers will play in the 2016 Russell Athletic Bowl. And it starts at 5:30 p.m. And I've got a question. Would y'all mind if I took a night off tomorrow night to watch the Mountaineers? Because at 5:30, it's going to take up the entire period of the program. And if you don't mind, it's the last football game of the season, and I'll go somewhere and watch it, cable being, you know, not here. I'll take my blanket with me, and I'll put it over my head, and I'll watch through the space between my fingers with my hands over my eyes. Let me know. Just, you know, if you don't mind. I don't know. Jen asks, is it true that Hair Plugs has bought up all available DC protest licenses for the 19th and the 20th? I don't think they're for purchase. I hadn't heard that. I mean, that sounds like the kind of thing that a fascist would do, but one never knows. Keith, meanwhile, with a new way of looking at things. Bob, here's a new one for the Orange Menace. POTUS, Putz of the United States. Just a thought. Well, see, I think it's going to be worthwhile that we keep doing this kind of stuff, because we're going to need, if we got 4 years of references to work on here. And that's a lot. Oh, gee, thanks, Gerald. Request denied. Return to work immediately. I know. Ooh, that's cold, Don. In the chat room, Don from Central PA says, Bob, you need to tell the Horn Family Community Congregation that tomorrow night, being church night, if they make you work, they have to listen to Bobby Grove songs all evening. You know, Jesus, This Is Jimmy. Hey, Matt in San Francisco, I promised not to play Jesus, This Is Jimmy in 2017. I didn't promise not to play it again in 2016. It could happen. Nah, I'm not even that mean. Well, I don't know. We'll see how, because If we don't do something with fundraising this evening, I definitely can't do it tomorrow evening, because then we'd be in one of those, you know, Bob turns on the reverb kind of holes. Yeah, you know, and we don't want that. VT Blom in the chat room. Oh, he's going to put Jesus, This Is Jimmy on a 3-hour loop. Ew. Asa says, come on, Bob, it's not like we expected you to be live yesterday or today either. Take a night off. Why wouldn't I be live tonight? I worked Thanksgiving, remember? Somebody's got to. I mean, I know back when I didn't do this, I always kind of hated the holiday times, just because my favorite progressive broadcasters weren't. So I thought I'd break with tradition. But I don't know. We got $268 to fundraise this evening, and of that we need to raise $268 of it, because we're still at zero. So we'll see. We'll see how that all plays out. Bob, Robert in Australia says, if anyone deserves a night off, it's Bob. Take a night off. Have fun. Enjoy yourself. We'll see, Robert. We'll see. Kitty in Boston, subject line, Mountaineers. Bob, you were so kind to get the gang together on Thanksgiving. Please do take a night off to enjoy the game. Signed, Kitty from Boston. P.S. If you play Jesus, This Is Jimmy again, I may self-harm. Well, we can't have that. So, all right. I'll extend the offer. Matt. I'll backdate it into two. No, there will be no Jesus, This Is Jimmy. I'm just that nice. Ron in Raleigh says, subject line, hell. If my sorry-ass Wahoos could win enough to be in a bowl game, I'd be watching them. So as far as I'm concerned, do what you need to do. P.S. All the other broadcasters are taking the whole damn week. They act like they're French. That's cold. All right, let's take a little break, and then we'll come back for conversation. Let's see. Line one is taken, but the stress line is open. If it works for you, some people it works for, some people it doesn't. 304-663-4676. And you are more than welcome to chime in on that line. We have no Green News Report this week because Brad and Desi have taken the week off. Good for them. Good for them. See, Luda, damn it. Quit. Get out of my mind. Subject line, WVU. Don't worry, Bob. WVU will be down by 30 by 5:45 anyway. Just kidding. It'll be at least 6 o'clock by the time they're down by 30. Well, we do have a long and sad tradition among the Mountaineers of checking to see if the bowl game check cleared and then sending in the scrubs. I mean, Dana Holgorsen has a brand new 5-year contract to celebrate. But I read somewhere that Miami has 6 or 7 players who couldn't make grades, whereas WVU's players all made grades. Maybe it'll make a difference. One may dare hope. Earther says, it presses the button on the mic or else it gets the hose again. No, Brother Bob, take the day off. Take 2 days off. Yeah, can't do that. But we'll see how it plays out. If I'm here, I'm here. If I'm not, I'm not. Oh, thank you. Brother Deacon Gerald has just taken us down to $248 to raise this evening. That's huge. Thank you, Gerald. Thank you. So, I don't know. Like I said, we'll see how it plays out. Just, you know, bills to pay. But, yeah, let's take a break. Gerald wanted a Ted Nugent song for a bumper, but I just can't. This came to mind, though. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
But after a while, I caught on. I mean, I saw what they were hiring. I also swiped my dance card once after an audition, and on a scale of 10, they gave me, for dance, 10, for looks, 3. Well, dance, 10, looks, 3, and I'm still on unemployment, dance for my own enjoyment. That ain't it, kid, that ain't it, kid. Dance, 10, looks, 3, it's like to die. Left the theater and called the doctor for my appointment to buy tits and ass. Bought myself a fancy pair, tightened up the derriere, did the nose with it, all that goes with it, tits and ass. Had the bingo bongos done, suddenly I'm getting national tours. Tits and ass won't get you jobs unless they're yours. Didn't cost a fortune neither, didn't hurt my sex life either. Flat and sassy, I would get the straight losers. Beggars really can't be choosers. That ain't it, kid, that ain't it, kid. Fix the chassis. How do you do? Life turned into an endless medley of gee, it had to be you. Why, tits and ass, where the cupboard once was bare, now you're not, if someone's there. You have got to pay top to bottom. Hey, it's a guess, just a dash of silicone. Shake your new maracas and you're fine. Tits and ass can change your life. They sure change mine. Have it all done, honey, take my word. Grab a cab, come on, see the wizard on Park and 73rd. What you see, keep the best of you, do the rest of you, pits or glass. I have never seen it fail, debutante or chorus girl.
Now you see why I couldn't resist. That the classic song from a chorus line. Dance 10, looks 3. You know, I mean, he's a New Yorker. You just know that Benito Cheeto is well familiar with that play. He's probably seen it several times. And that's probably his favorite song. Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thank you very kindly. We've got a good start at knocking down fundraising this. Well, in fact, this evening's fundraising just got knocked down. Courtesy of Don in Central PA. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you to Asa who took out the extra $8. As well as to Glenn and, as aforementioned, Brother Deacon Gerald. Plus, by way of knocking down tomorrow night's, in which case I will take the night off. And this will make it possible. Robert in Australia, with a note, said, I'll get the ball rolling with $100 provided it gets matched in the next hour. So that would do it. If we can match up Robert's offer, then I'll get the night off. Thank you very, very kindly. Keith says, "What do you think this is? Some kind of liberal talk program or something?" Oh wait, it is. Carry on. Enjoy the game. Remember when the Senate took the day off to go to the football game? If they could do it, why can't you? Well, there's that six-figure salary the Senate gets, but, I mean, never mind. So we're well on the way. There's a $100 challenge on the table, courtesy of Robert. We'll call it the Let Bob watch the Mountaineers through the space between his fingers with a blanket over his head challenge. I know that's a mouthful, but it's there. So 10 at 10, 20 at 5, 5 at 20, etc. All we got to do is match Robert's challenge. Thank you very kindly, everyone who jumped in to make that happen. Thank you very much indeed. Let's run over to the Skype line where Todd has been patiently waiting. I want a Christmas dinner report, Todd.
Bob.
What's up?
Bob?
Yeah, I'm here. You're there.
Oh, yeah, all right. Listen, oh, my God. Yeah, dinner was too much. All right, I didn't have to eat I didn't eat yesterday. I didn't eat it.
It felt kind of like an anaconda, did you?
It was pretty much like that. It was, I felt guilty. There's all these hungry people around. But man will prevail. I had a nice Faulkner quote.
Wow, I was going to say, it's not every progressive talk show that is fortunate enough to get a Faulkner quote 2 days after Christmas. I feel blessed.
Well, men will prevail because he has a voice. I'm paraphrasing, but when that went up, it's just like, oh, that's appropriate. That is so appropriate because this is where we are now. When the dust settles, when the Trump pansies become disillusioned, and that, of course, it's somewhat long, so I won't read the whole thing, but you understand what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Nobel speech, right?
I don't know where it came from.
The man will prevail is his Nobel acceptance.
Okay, well, that has to be it. I mean, because man has a voice. In other words, if you boil it down, it comes to that man is resilient and man has a voice. And no matter how hard this seems, maybe we'll get through this. And I'm going to go off topic because I want to commend you about your filibuster. But honest to God, the weirdo fascist, if there was a Department of Fire Prevention, he would hire a goddamn pyromaniac. What the fuck? I mean, I hate
kind of feels that way, doesn't it?
Well, what else are we just... yes. Yes. So this is kind of, in a way, it's making me optimistic because at some point, his minions and his followers have to say to themselves, "Wait a minute, wait a minute, this is not what we voted for," "Wait a minute, Goldman Sachs guy, wait a minute," at some point, and what's going to happen is going to be like,
yeah, but I don't want to burst your bubble or anything, Todd. They don't care.
Well. That's the other side of the coin, isn't it?
I mean, I've got a story here. because I've always got a story. This comes from CNBC, from John Harwood. John Harwood said that white fear of change is why Democrats lost under Obama. He went on a little Twitter frenzy.
Okay.
He said, for those making silly argument that Obama hurt Democratic Party, last five presidents have left both houses of Congress in opposition hands. Drivers of D casualties under Obama, A, depth of financial crisis, Great Recession, B, accumulated angst over 30-year income stagnation, C, effective unified R opposition, especially to ACA, D, Obama's race amid white fear of cultural change.
Yes. Right.
That's a very kind of academic way of saying racism, isn't it? Because I'm still I'm so far down on the economic ladder, Todd, that I don't necessarily know what a lot of people are pointing at when they talk about economic anxiety over the last 8 years of Barack Obama. I actually spend time trying to sort that out. And this isn't me being this isn't all me being all Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake. That's no shit. No, I'm working class. Okay. That's all I've ever been. But, and let me try to work through this real quick, because I might actually reach something that almost makes sense, at least to me. So George W. Bush's gang of thieves and thugs took a government surplus when they entered office in January 2001.
Right.
Pissed it down a deep hole.
Right.
Wrecked the economy.
Correct.
Gave tax breaks to goddamn billionaires.
Affirmative.
Looked the other way while bagmen from Wall Street were carrying the nation's wealth out under our noses.
All day long.
And then the economy crashed on Bush's goddamn watch. Barack Obama comes in and is not the FDR we were hoping for, but goes about a calm centrist method and manner of making sure that the roof didn't cave in while the house was on fire. Am I still getting it?
Well, see, that's what frustrates learned folks. Because at the end of the day, Obama showed himself to be a corporatist at core, a centrist corporatist. And the folks were like, but he's the most divisive, and I can't, it grapes me. I can't stand it. How is he the most racially divisive president? When you say that, when people say that, you're telling on yourself. That means that you have a problem with the color of that man's skin. Because in his actions, he proved to be a centrist. He did nothing racially divisive at all except his presence in that White House.
Right. No. That's what the racial division was. He was that one in our White House. But you can't, don't take me away from this, because I think we're making progress here. This is like group, Todd. So the economic anxiety didn't catch up for 8 years after the guy who caused the economic devastation and white folks went to the polls to blame the black guy for the economic devastation that the white guy caused. Have I got it? I mean, have I finally got it? I've been working on this since November 8th, okay?
That's it. It has to be his fault. It couldn't be the white guy's fault.
Well, I mean, we'd had all them other white presidents before, and nobody had no economic anxiety. Well, I mean, except the people standing in the bread lines and the soup lines and the unemployment lines and the signs that said, keep moving, we don't have work for ourselves here. And that was white folks, too. Y'all keep moving, too. And the economic anxiety of the Dust Bowl and the Okies and the people in California who didn't want the Okies there. I mean,
It's a lot, isn't it? It's a lot to process, isn't it?
Well, it is and it isn't, Todd.
But see, that is your point and my point. And see, at this point, this thing has distilled down. We have eliminated. In other words, we've done all the permutations and combinations. This is just distilled down to, we've got to put the niggers in their place, and we had enough of that nigger in the White House, and fuck it. And the black folks who voted for the fascist, okay, they just don't know any better. Some of them just figure, well, you got to remember, you got the Stockholm effect too with a lot of black folks. You know, they just identify with white folks because of what they do, because, well, they have money and they must be doing something right, because I don't have shit.
Well, I mean, hold on a minute. So you remember the quote or tweet or whatever it was from that little bastard with the tiny hands the other day when he said he wanted, I mean, I think I played the audio. He said he wanted to thank the black people who didn't come out to vote.
Yes.
I mean, yes. That's, man, that is having your nose rubbed in it.
Okay.
I don't mean yours.
Right. He's the great white hope, Bob. This is what, see, this is, the mainstream media has failed us in many ways. And I'm sorry, but this is a conversation we have to talk about in addition to you addressing the Israel issue. That's the real reason I called, but I don't want to get off of your topic here. Because this is exactly what we need to talk about. We had to be honest with this nonsense. And it goes back, you know, I was like a few minutes late listening tonight with that weirdo jackass woman calling Michelle Obama an ape. Now, honestly, okay.
That's a ape.
Even if you look at, what?
That's a ape. It's not like
an
she,
ape, right.
It's not. Yeah, it's not like she knows to use "an" in front of a, as an article in front of a word that begins with a vowel or anything.
Oh my
it's,
God! She is. Yeah, I can't even speak like that.
She okay. is. She is a ape in heels.
A ape.
A ape.
You see, this is part of the problem. This is, but he's too academic. You remember, like last week when I was saying, "Oh, these people, they, you know, they'd rather have the butcher." Yeah, I'm gonna go to the butcher. I don't need no smart person. Let me go to the butcher because he knows how to cut meat. I need a hip replacement. I don't need an orthopedic surgeon. They know too much. They've been to college. You know, that's that bullshit, man. It's that anti-intellectualism bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
See? Because, I mean, if you look at Michelle Obama, it's not like she has a broad nose. It's not like she dark skinned.
Well, I'm kind of okay if she did.
Right.
Beauty and brains, I mean, brains are beautiful, okay? I'm weird that way.
No, you're not. A lot of people are like that. Yeah, no, you're not the only one.
I could never have had and never did successfully have any kind of a long-term relationship with somebody who was not intelligent. Because gay or straight, sooner or later, you're going to not be having sex, and you're going to have to carry on a conversation.
You remember my famous quote, don't you? After you get your nut, what are you going to talk about?
See, that's either bumper sticker or tattoo worthy. Me, I'm too wordy. my prose is too prolix.
I'm sorry. I'm distilling because I know other people want to talk, but you just got
no,
me.
No, go, man. Go. You're okay.
Listen, this thing, and this is the problem. They don't even understand the shitstorm they stepped in, and now it has been distilled down. They'd rather have, if they even knew what a fascist was. They'd rather have not only a fascist. Now wait a minute, we know he's a fascist. Matter of fact, he started his fascism before he even got in office. Even his children started the goddamn fascism. His daughter trying to sell a bracelet after Diane Sawyer's interview, right? Come on. They're hustlers. They're fucking, they're like the dude at the deli when I used to live in the city that sold the CDs out of a duffel bag. They're fucking hustlers. You know, they're just dressed up a little better. That's all they are. They're fucking hustlers. You know, but I don't want to get too... I want to get too street now because I want to dovetail into what you started with. See, and that woman who said A8, right?
Yeah.
Now you mentioned her job description and what it required. Do you think a black woman would have gotten that job?
No, because she didn't know. Because she didn't have the private phone number of her member of the House of Delegates or the Clay County representative in the Senate, which is probably. Mm-hmm. The way that kind of thing works. By the way, you just got a note from Jen in Australia. Todd, how many times do I have to remind you, Michelle shows her upper arms in public?
I love Jen. She's and they're beautiful upper arms. I mean, she's getting better looking by the year. Oh, my God. You know.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to be one of those women who's beautiful, 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 and then, boom, you know.
Well,
and that's not to say she won't be beautiful then. It's just that she won't show her age, won't show her age, won't show her age, won't show her age, and then ancient.
And then ancient. Well, you know what?
And that'll be like when she's 95.
Yeah.
Because she is one of those women who will live to be 95.
See? Now, right, exactly. Now, she got criticized for telling people how to eat, you know, please eat healthy in a healthy way. Right?
Because, communism. Communism. Pure communism.
But, well, learned people understand. They're like, you know what? You know, I'm going to talk about what I did. But anyway, you know, folks who understand that diabetes runs rampant in the Black community. Like at one point, I was a diabetes prevention specialist, and I knew a little bit about diabetes. But it's the worst thing you can do is feed your kids soda. Don't let your kids drink soda. Period.
Because high fructose corn syrup roasts the pancreas.
I
kind of learned that the hard way.
Yeah, it's not good. So what she's doing, see what's going to happen very soon is like, you know, the insurance companies aren't going to want to cover that because it's a lot of, you know, type 2 diabetes can be preventable in many ways. But, you know, how can you fault someone for encouraging people to eat well and encouraging kids to exercise? But, you know, it was just about they didn't like who those people were in the White House.
Look, if Nancy Reagan had said, you know, I don't think we need to be selling big gulps. That's way too much soda for a child to drink. All the white Republicans and all the economically anxious people would have said, God bless her. She cares about American children.
Right. Oh, and you know,
if Laura Bush had said that, you know, y'all need to be drinking margaritas like me. You know, a little margarita and a Darvon. It's a beautiful combination.
She did look a little bit lit all the time, honest to God.
Wouldn't you be?
with Georgie? Mm. But you know what's interesting? Now, here we have the new mayor in Philly, right, Jim Kenney. And people called him a crazy man. He was the first city in the nation to start this soda tax, which is a great idea. So, the big...
Wait, now, hold on a damn minute. I pay a tax on every bottle of pop I buy in West Virginia.
Yeah, well, there's an extra tax in Philly if you buy soda because it's a health issue. You know, it's like, you know, well, it's like cigarette tax. You know, I mean, you can smoke cigarettes if you want, you can smoke weed if you want, but you're gonna have to pay a little bit more because at the end of the day, you know, it might cost society a little bit. Okay, because some people will have health insurance and some won't. And oh God, don't get me started on the health insurance. It's so disgusting. So anyway, that whole I don't even get, there's no connection there. You know, Michelle Obama is a learned woman. She I've used that word like 10 times already, but I mean, come on. Yeah. What do I have to say? This Michelle Obama was an administrator for a large corporation, a lawyer. And this dumb bitch can't even fucking articulate a sentence that would pass in high school. A8? What?
Yeah, I know.
Back the fuck up. You know, come on. And that's white privilege. And if you told her that, oh, that's that PC, you know, liberal nonsense. No, bitch. Shut the fuck up and study. Get your Wagner's, you know, whatever. Get your Norton Anthology. Get your Wagner's, you know, do some reading. And I want to commend you on having the courage to talk about this bullshit with Israel. People have had just about a fucking enough.
Well, apparently a lot of people haven't because they're at least the people who matter, because there was an absolute shitstorm of Democrats hauling out the shivs to slide between Barack Obama's ribs after that happened. I mean, all we did was fucking abstain. We didn't vote yes on it. We didn't veto it. We just said, hey, you know what? We're stepping back from this one.
Well,
and the part that I didn't mention, Todd, is that sleazy bucket of guts, Bibi Netanyahu,
thank you,
had the unmitigated temerity to lobby Donald Trump about the resolution before he was even in fucking office.
Yeah, Do you see? We're at the second affront.
The dirty little, and this is after the nasty little bastard went to the Congress of the United States and used the Congress of the, a joint session of the Congress of the United States to criticize the President of the United States.
Yeah.
And him being a leader of a little foreign country.
Remember that? What an affront. See, and I'm going to tell you something. He's like in that Kissinger category with this fake-ass accent. Because Netanyahu went to Cheltenham High School. Okay? That's right over the line of Philadelphia. That's where Bill Cosby has his estate. All right?
Well, I mean, it's the same with the Israeli ambassador, Ron Dormer. That guy sounds like he, lives two blocks over.
Did you hear that shit today on NPR?
Yeah, the interview? Yeah, I did, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. And Robert Siegel was like, even Robert Siegel, now he's a little right wing. I've been listening to him for years.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm surprised that Dormer didn't call him a self-hating Jew.
Dude was upset. And, I mean, Dormer was he couldn't stand, and this is what he tried. He kept talking over Robert. Robert Siegel was trying to be reasonable, but he's like, well, look. And Robert Siegel, he's like, well, come on, let's be real here, blah, blah, blah. And Dormer just kept, but see, that's what they do. They think they're a protected class. And see, this is what I want to talk about. This is, and I told you, I lived with a Hasidic Jew when I was in boarding school. He was Hasidic. I spent a whole year in tight quarters with him. And, he was a nice guy. We were good friends. But I learned a lot, because when you live with someone, they confide in you. And see, first of all, we have to talk about nomenclature, all right? There's a difference between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. Because, honestly, now you're a word knower, but you see, anti-Semitic means you're not really liking Jews or Muslims. They're both Semites.
Well, but if you check the literature, that has been entirely co-opted to mean anti-Jewish.
It has been co-opted.
Because nobody ever refers to somebody who, you would never call, say, Benito Cheeto an anti-Semite for despising Arabs.
Okay.
Or some asshole at a mega church in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, members of whose congregation were probably responsible for burning down or setting fire to construction equipment on an Islamic Center construction site. You'd never call them anti-Semitic.
Well, I guess that...
Let's get this out of the way. There's no such thing as race. Okay?
No, it's an artificial construct. Exactly.
Invented by white people. Absolutely. Once we get that out, okay, so there's ethnicity. For instance, do you know what language, I think I'm right on this. If you consult the language tree, and I don't mean walking up and asking a question. This ain't HR fucking puffing stuff. But the language tree has branches. Do you know what branch Arabic, Aramaic, and Hebrew are on?
I don't. No.
You're going to love this. Nilo-Saharan.
No way.
In other words,
opening up a can of worms.
Once upon a time, the Sahara Desert was a big-ass grassland.
I know that, right. Wait a minute, but you opened up a can of worms there, Bob. I'm telling you right now. Mm. Go ahead and finish.
And so those language groups develop in the Nile Delta and over into the Saharan grasslands.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, interestingly, a fuckload far away from the Asian Levant.
Yep.
And then, of course, you get the origin story about Abram, who comes from where? I know you got this one, Todd. Where'd Abram come from?
Palestine.
No. No, where? Hell no. Abram, with his ancient daddy, got run out of Ur of the Chaldees.
Wait a minute. That's over there. That's like Iraq and whatnot, isn't it?
That is Iraq and whatnot. Eridu.
Yeah.
And so he was probably not speaking a Nilo-Saharan language.
Oh, see, Bob, we're on the same page. See? I mean, yes.
No, I mean, yeah. I'm not trying to get all eugenics or social Darwinism. No. You know, no, but, I mean, these are realities.
We're trying to talk facts so we can bring fact to fiction, right?
One would hope.
Well, who else is going to do it?
Well, there is that.
And see, I like what you brought up because, and I want to push back on, I heard a buddy from Canada the other day, you know, geographically, Africa's a continent, but I, you know, from working at the university for 10 years and then being a student there.
No, yeah, we got this sorted out. The Arabian Peninsula is not Africa. It's Asia.
Right, right. But I'm just saying, see the folks over there, see, culturally, North Africa is Middle Eastern, culturally. But Africa, the continent, that's a continent. It's Africa. But the folks, see, what happens is that the folks, I mean, when you're around these people, this is, you hear it because there's a little prejudice going on. That's why, like, when you take geopolitics or whatever, you know these folks, there's sub-Saharan Africa and Northern Africa. That's why they divide it like that, because they don't see themselves as the same as the sub-Saharan Africans.
Well, right, because and all that goes back to a bunch of ancient Roman stuff, Todd, because the Romans considered what we call North Africa, they just called it Africa.
Right.
But on the other hand, they called Egypt, Egypt.
Well,
and largely because they had such minimal knowledge of sub-Saharan Africa. You know, they had no way of...
Dark continent.
You said it, I didn't.
I'm just saying. I mean, you know, after the grasslands left and those dunes, I mean, who the hell wants to go over those dunes if you don't have a Toyota 4Runner? You know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah, it'd be a few thousand years before we got the Paris to Dakar rally.
You know, so back to this Israeli thing, you know, unless you're really good friends with a Hasidic Jew and you get good friends with them, there's a reason that they call themselves Hasidic Jews, the chosen people. And I'm just telling, it's not like this is anecdotal. This is what they believe. And I'm telling you, you've ever been to Brooklyn, had any friends in Brooklyn, especially Brooklyn. I say that because it's a really high concentration, like in Williamsburg and Bedford-Stuyvesant. Now, there's a reason that so, you know, they stay cloistered together, because if you really understand what their belief system is, it's very much like white supremacy. They believe they're the chosen people. They believe they should be making the rules. I mean, part of their religion is heavy studying. You know, they're supposed to really know everything.
Torah, Talmud, sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way it is. And, you know, that's just their belief system. And I don't fault people for their belief system. I fault people when their belief system overlaps into my existence or other people's existence. See, that's the problem. And this settlement thing, like, yeah, and I don't like that euphemism either, because, you know, if people don't understand, you know, I like to use the pizza analogy. You and a buddy go to get a pizza, two of you, right? We go to get the pizza. We go pick up the pizza, there's 8 slices in the pizza. I'm driving, my buddy's in the passenger side, whatever. He's hungry. He eats 4 slices on the way home. And we're supposed to split the pizza. So we get home, it's like, oh, there's 4 slices left. We have to split it. I'm like, no, man, I'm sorry, man. You ate your shit. What the fuck?
That's my 4 slices of pizza. You had your 4.
You had your 4. What the fuck you expect me to do? So they keep gobbling up this land. And it's not only that they gobble it up. It's like, you know what? They need to back the fuck up with this nonsense. I believe, look, I'm sorry those people were persecuted. It's terrible. But the folks that are settling, they've done these genetic tests. They're Caucasians. They have nothing to do with that area at all, period, most of them. You know, you got a whole lot of Eastern European Jews over there. They didn't have shit to do with that. You know, they had nothing to do with that. And they just came in and took those people's houses, the keys, everything. And people have to watch people living in their parents' houses. You know, that's not right. Nobody wanted to put up with that. And on top of that, they operate on an apartheid system.
Well, what else are you supposed to call it? I mean,
it is.
People living inside the territorial borders of Israel who do not have Israeli citizenship, are not allowed to have Israeli citizenship, cannot participate in civic life, and have deeply diminished rights.
Right. And it is no quandary how they, or question how they identify with the Boers in South Africa. Because they were doing the same shit. Matter of fact, they helped train those people on how to do intelligence and do what they do or did there. See, so a lot, and I really wasn't hit to all that when I was younger. I was a late teenager before I really understood that, you know, because we were always told, well, Israel's our friend. But, you know, I have no problem with Israel, but I have a problem with Zionism. And there's a difference. And that's the discussion that we need to have, just like we need to have a discussion about race here in terms of white.
Well, you know, you talk about Israeli security forces training the Boers. Well, guess who else went for training from the Israeli security forces?
Tell me.
Did it not come out during the Ferguson unrest that members of those forces had trained in protest suppression with Israeli police? Did that not happen?
Oh my God, I do remember reading that. Oh my God, yes, yep, yeah. Oh my God, yes. And you know, here's a caveat to that. Like, you know, we give them $3 billion, and like you said, a lot of that is an armory, right? You know, weapons. And what they're allowed to do is test drive those weapons on human beings because they don't care about the Palestinians. So they use that, you know, they use all kinds of terrible weapons on the Palestinians, and they take, you know, good reports because they know everything that's going on. They control everything. So they're able to take good statistics and see what's going on and what those weapons actually do. And that's part of the contract. You know, with them using those weapons, you know, for our defense contractors. And it's such a shame. You know, all this war is so unnecessary. And you know, and that's a big part of what's going on in Syria with the war. Well, not, I mean, it's about energy, too. It's about the drought. Like, you had a call from the Midwest, I think, like Wisconsin or something. I forget his name, but he had a good point a couple months ago about that. It gets lost. A lot of that is about climate change. But also a lot about, see, there's fuel lines. I mean, think about it. Everybody, if you do something, there's a motivation behind what you're doing. Okay? Why do you think Russia's just involved with Syria? They're not doing that shit because they just feel like it. They're doing it because there's fuel lines, gas and stuff running through Syria.
And a Mediterranean coast.
Right. And Hillary Clinton had some little investment in that. You know, you dig deep. And a lot of people do. And Trump probably does, too. I mean, that the fascist guy probably does too. But see, you don't hear that on the corporate news because it's corporate news. See, a good, this democratic republic requires work. We have to study. We have to do research. You know, people need to wake the hell up. If this is not a wake up call, I don't know what is. We have to wake up.
Yeah, but let me just say something here, because, like I said, a number of Democrats have shanked Obama over this. The entire Republican, whatever it is in a state of hair on fire, pearl clutching, and hand wringing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that by the time tomorrow, well, I'm sure the right wing religion industry is. I bet you if I went looking right now, I could find a clip of somebody saying that this clearly means that Obama is the Antichrist.
Yep.
But the fact of the matter is, Todd, again, we just abstained. We decided for once not to let the tail wag us. We decided for once not to allow ourselves to be deliberately humiliated by acceding to the demands of a petty little fascist tyrant of a little bitty country that exercises far more influence in this country than any similarly sized country on the planet. And when you get right down to it, the courageous response would have been not to abstain, but to vote yes.
Yes.
Because see, what they're really sweating, and I don't know if you remember this or not, but do you remember when Hillary? Remember when Hillary stuck her foot in it by coming out in support of legislation against BDS?
What was BDS?
Boycott, divest, and sanctions.
Oh yeah.
Because see, that is what is scaring the piss out of the fascist Israelis. Because it's catching on. And no, everybody who supports BDS is not an anti-Semite.
And listen, that is. Let me tell you how effective that is, because I started paying attention with that. And if you, and I'm a little gardener, right? I like to garden. And there's a lot of, see, these settlements, they make a lot of like low-tech crap made in Israel, okay? Pots, you know, nice pots, you know, self-watering pots, things like that. So you need to look at the labels on your products. And that would hurt the exact folks that we need to hurt with that, because that is bullshit. You know, I'm sorry, but this occupation nonsense needs to stop. It needs to stop. The civilized.
If it was any other country on the planet, it would have been stopped by the world community. Okay, maybe not any other country, but any other country that we deemed worthwhile.
Well, look, we're on the cusp, because the only people who are supporting this, well, not the only, but you know, it's a shame, man. You got these divinians, is that how you say it? These people who really are praying for the end of the world. Dominionists,
millennialists, okay. Christian reconstructionists.
That's it. Right. That's why he was entertaining the perennial presidential candidate for a while. What's his name? That preacher from Arkansas.
Huckabee.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, so, you know, maybe people get away from the bullshit television and the fake news and work a little bit. But, yeah, you know, it's amazing how that BDS kind of disappeared. It sure did disappear, but people were paying attention, you know, just to warn it. But see, this goes back to what we were talking about a couple weeks ago, 3 or 4 months ago. This is why we have to have some coalition building. Because Occupy is not quite dead. You know, Black Lives Matter is not dead. The fight for Appalachia is not dead at all. And we all have common ground. And we work out our differences later. You know, but the fight is for the future of America right now, because some Americans have let America down now. And we have all we have left is protest now. This is all we have. That's all we have.
And they would damn well like to take that away.
Oh, he's working on it. Oh, did you hear it? I don't know what happened with this, because I had to do some social things. They cleared out the first floor of that Trump Tower in New York today.
No, what?
Now, I would not put it above him. You know, he's all about that false creating a fucking something where there's nothing. You know what I mean? A false flag to say there's some type of tragedy going on. And yeah, they had to clear out the first floor of the Trump Tower. I don't know what happened, but it was this afternoon. But he's not above some bullshit like that. And he needs to shut the fuck up, first of all, because he is not president here. And he's usurping the current president's power.
Well, and that was part of that that interview with Dormer. That's his name, isn't it? Dormer?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how dare the President of the United States exercise the powers of the President of the United States?
Ain't that some shit?
Well, like I said, he was one bluster away from calling him a schwatza.
Because I think Robert Siegel's a Jew. I mean, that's pretty much, I'm pretty sure he's a Jew. You know, but he might not be a good Jew. You know, as they say.
Well, obviously he's not. He wasn't down on the ground. He wasn't down on the ground kissing Ron Dormer's ass. But I really would have liked. I would like it if one of these people would confront one of these fascist assholes and say, "So, you're so mad at us, you really don't want that $3 billion anymore every year, right? I mean, I wouldn't want to hurt your pride with those $3 billion that the American taxpayers give you every year. So we can just call that off, right?" And watch that little fucker dry up like a daisy in the goddamn desert.
Wouldn't that be nice? And you know,
Because it really does. It pisses me off, Todd, that we're paying for their universal health care.
Ain't that some shit? They have the best of everything over there. Oh my God, they got the best of everything over there. They really do. They don't pay for health care. They have cheap transportation. Schools are good. You know.
And the reality is that every person who has ever worked a day in the United States since 1948 has had a portion of their tax dollars involuntarily go to prop up that apartheid regime.
And you don't hear enough about
every working that. Person.
And look, this jackass, this person I really do not like. Yet the one who smuggled in, he smuggled nuclear
secrets.
Yes. He got caught doing that. But you don't hear shit about that. See, you don't hear shit about that. So the thing is, it's intertwined with all this subversive bullshit that has to, you know, the air has to be cleared. But we should not be, at this stage, in 2016, we should not be supporting that type of regime. And that's what it is. And, you know, there's a lot of Jews who do not like that shit. You don't hear about it in the press unless you...
There's so much we don't hear about that. Like, you know, look anywhere... And you can find a story about the atrocities committed in Arabic countries against women, and the way that a woman in Saudi Arabia can't even drive a car. But you got to really, really look to find how the ultra Orthodox in Israel treat women. You know, they literally have to ride at the back of the bus if they're allowed on the bus at all.
Yep.
Remember the story from a couple of years ago where people on an airplane were forced to wait while some ultra Orthodox guy threw a hissy because he was going to have to sit next to a filthy, filthy, disgusting woman.
And they placated him. I was like, what the fuck is this shit? And he looked like he had a bath in like 2 weeks. I wouldn't want to sit next to his musty ass, you know.
Time out. I'm awarding a cowbell for musty ass.
Thanks, Bob. I'm not going to let it pollute my my cooking. I still have leftovers. Not the musty. Yeah. So, and then Netanyahu had the nerve. This is the gall in this asshole. Now, fuck him. And you know what? If he shows up, I'll tell him. I'm like, fuck you. You fucking wannabe. You know, trying to talk like Kissinger and shit. You know, you goddamn went to school in Philly, right outside of Philly. So shut the fuck up. But listen, call those people in on Christmas. They don't do shit on their holidays. They don't no work, no electricity, no nothing.
Hey, when's the last time an American president called the Israeli ambassador in on Yom Kippur?
They won't do it. Don't get me started, man. And I don't want anyone to misconstrue what I'm saying. I'm gonna say it. It sounds flip, but I'm gonna say it. I grew up with Jews. I have some of my Jews are my best friends, and this is I know of what I speak. I'm talking about the ultra-right wing. I'm telling you, those folks are, and it's fine. That's your belief system. It's fine, but just be honest about what you are. You set yourself up, right? You think you're better than everybody else. That's what your faction or your religion tells you. That's why you go to your own schools. That's why you do your own thing. You stay sequestered. But don't fucking put that shit on everybody else. And be honest about what you are. Okay? It's like a Klansman.
You mean racist?
Maybe, you know. Pardon me?
You mean racist?
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of hard. Yeah. It's unless you're really, really hardcore, it's kind of hard to get a racist to admit that you know, he's racist.
And this is the conversation that more people, but it's coming. I think it's coming. And Amy Goodman does a great job. You know, she does what she can. But, you know, and weren't you on Ian Master's show a couple times?
Yeah, it's been a while, but yeah.
Yeah, and he does, you know, and you and he, you know, you guys do a great job, but see, America, we need to have this conversation, because I just think if we can break through the ignorance gap, you know, we'll be better off, because look where this has gotten us. Look where we are.
Oh, I know.
You know, and I still hear these assholes in the morning on my morning show call in and say, "Well, just give them a chance." That motherfucker burned his chance up when he started appointing these weirdos.
Oh no, I think it happened. I think it happened a little while before that, Todd. But let me. Were you listening? Did you happen to listen last night? It's okay if you didn't.
I did. Oh, I didn't get to that. Oh man, that was great. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So did you?
No, wait a minute. I met him. I met Joe Wilson face to face.
Ew.
Yeah. No, wait. Let me tell you that story.
No, I was thinking about you when I. When I saw the clip from C-SPAN. Yeah, what about all these unvetted Puerto Ricans?
Oh God!
And you have the fortitude, Todd, to get up and watch that every morning? I couldn't.
Well, I listen on the radio.
You are a tough. Tough,
well,
man.
This is what I do. This is the way I look at it, Bob. That is the true pulse. I mean, see, I love talk radio. I'm addicted. I've always loved radio. I love radio. Okay, because you can watch dishes. You can bet. You know, you can do a lot while you listen to radio. And remember, I take care of the old people, take them to doctor's appointments and all that. So, you know, it's what I do. Now, when you listen to Washington Journal, it's open calls, and then they'll get guests, and they try to keep it balanced. They'll get the Heritage Foundation folks, and they'll get Brookings. You know, they only get the left, the right, blah, blah, blah. But if you listen to a lot of talk radio, you notice that they don't let a lot of black people who appear to be audibly black on the radio a lot of times. You know, or, you know, different people. They let everybody call in. It's not screened. And you really get, this is how I knew that Hillary was not going to win. One of the reasons, you know, I mean, it was a lot of reasons, but that was one of the reasons. And remember, I was in survey research for years. That was what I did. I've done thousands of interviews, and you know, it's when you hear these people talk, they had the passion. This election was about emotion. It wasn't really about logic. And she only had one positive thing. She was a woman and a Democrat. Okay, and if you weren't in that camp, after that point, you're losing ground. But My point is that when you listen to Washington Journal, you see what trouble we're in. Now, there's some really, really interesting folks that call in who know what they're talking about. And there's some folks who don't have a clue. And it's like you can hear it. I mean, I've heard this before. I mean, we're right back. I mean, we're back to 1959. These folks are just like,
well, you might be interested to know, Steve from Georgia standing in the chat room just said, Washington Journal aged me 10 years. I had to quit that show. It was killing me.
See? Well, you know, to me, it's like, it gets me going because I'm like, damn, I have a lot of work to do. See, I have a plan.
I want to backtrack with you for a minute. Sure. Simply because, you know, you're down there in South Carolina, Stan.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Eric Bjorn ran his campaign down in South Carolina, Stan.
Last night, Eric. Right. Go, yeah. Eric. Go.
Do you generally agree with his take on the state of the Democratic Party in South Carolina?
Yeah. Now, I live where Vince Sheehan. Now, Vince Sheehan is well liked, but the machine. See, and I'm sorry, but you see, a lot of things in America. This whole country was built on racial inequality. This is how America, in this couple hundred years, this is how we got so wealthy. Remember, not you, because you know, but you see, besides the northern industrialists, the planter class in the South was incredibly rich, and that money is still here. That's why Charleston is so nice.
Yeah, it didn't burn up in Atlanta.
No, they sent that money back to New York. They're not stupid. And those, they were keeping the shipping industry going. You know, come on. Money
well, look, let's
money.
Look. Let's talk for a minute about the designee, the nominee for the Attorney General of the United States.
Oh, my God.
Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. All right?
Yeah. Okay, Bob. Go ahead, Bob.
Now, I'm just checking here.
You just want to piss me the fuck off, don't you, Bob?
No, I love you, man. I just want to check here, and get some. I want to do some thought experiment. That's what I want to do. He just turned 70 years old. He was born December 24th, 1946. He was named after his daddy, who was Jefferson Beauregard Sessions Jr. Okay. So, let's say, 19. So, how old do you reckon daddy would have been when Tripp there was born?
Judging from the time frame, probably about, let's say, 24, 25.
Okay, so he's born 1919, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the son of Jefferson Beauregard Sessions.
You want to go out? Yeah. Mm.
Pappy owned a general store in Hibbert, Alabama, and then a farm equipment dealership. Now, you can guess who was not welcome in that there general store. Well, no, the money spent, so they probably had to come round back.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Of course.
So,
yep.
That would put the original Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions... That would put him getting born maybe about 1895, which means, of course, that his great-grandpappy, the nominee's great-grandpappy, was probably a Confederate war veteran.
Oh, most certainly. What?
Or, since given the time frame we're talking about, maybe it's just born out of the lost cause bullshit that got spread all over the South starting about 1875. Because that's when, you know, that's when things like, that's when we gave up on Reconstruction. I said, nah,
right.
That's okay. Go back to abusing them. Oh, thank
boy
you kindly.
Andrew. That was your boy Andrew.
You know, we'd have whoop them if they didn't have so many more soldiers than us. So he's the same age as Benito Chito, 70, and he is at best one generation removed from the ugliest level. Because remember, the Klan really gets froggy in the early days of the 20th century.
Yep. Exactly.
And I would bet you dollars to donuts that Pappy Sessions there with his general merchandise store in Hibbert and his farm equipment store was either a member of the Klan or the Conservative Citizens Council.
If you wore galluses and overalls, you were a member of the Klan. If you wore a necktie, you were probably a member of the White Citizens Council.
Right. And see, remember, that coincided when the black doughboys were coming back, and they'd been in New York, you know, and they weren't having that bullshit when they came back. They're like, oh, I don't think so. So, you know, too many uppity Negroes running around. We got to have the Klan again, you know.
There are pictures of Klan marches down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. in the early parts of this century that had 20,000, 30,000 people in them.
I've seen those pictures. I know exactly of what you speak. I know of what you speak. Yes. See, this is what I'm saying. This is just what I'm saying, is that folks need to get back. I'm sorry that you were miseducated or uneducated or semi-educated or not educated. But folks, it's not, I mean, you don't have to do that much digging. Even if you don't like to read, YouTube has all these videos out there for free, even if you don't like to read. And then when you watch the videos, you might want to read a little bit if you have a little spare time. But this is American history, you know, it's fallen back on itself. It's really disgusting. And this is why folks like Bob, myself, the Angry Indian, a lot of other folks who are in this Horn family understand the critical nature of our situation right now. Because we've seen this. We saw this guy, this fascist guy. It was like, wow, he stayed up all night for a week watching Mussolini videos. I mean, it was so fucking obvious. Like, no, this guy can't be serious. But yes, he was. You know, and we're in a world of trouble if we don't do something. You know, and so I'm thinking we can only fight back at so many of these appointees, even though they're all ridiculous. Jeff Sessions is the worst one. He is totally unacceptable, unfucking acceptable.
And he will sail through the Senate because of that ancient Senate courtesy and of comity where... Well, I've known Senator Sessions for many years now, and while I may not agree with him on everything, he is an honorable man.
Now, Bob, I understand what you're saying, and this is what scares me, okay? The guy coming in, our guy on our side, supposedly, okay, Schumer is smart, but, you know, he likes Schumer. Schumer likes Schumer. And he likes to make deals. And he's willing to fucking do some crazy shit.
I think the reason Schumer wound up being the incoming minority leader is because the plan was for him to be the incoming majority leader with Hillary as president. And between the two of them, they could have done some great works for Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when she said, I was the senator for Wall Street?
Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't a lie, but that, you know, that's all water over the dam now, and the dam's fit to burst. You know, Dick Durbin has been was Harry Reid's lieutenant for eons, and he's still right where he was. Now, why he didn't rise up, I don't know. But I know Chuck Schumer is going to be open to some clean coal legislation, because that'll be good for Wall Street. Anytime they can do the financial deals for the coal industry, you know, they have no risk. They have no exposure. They just charge a fee for doing the bond deals, and, you know, the money changes hands, and you know, nobody has to go and take a shower and just leave the money on the dresser.
Wasn't it terrible the way they had to beg, and maybe they're still begging for the extended coverage for the coal miners?
Well, yeah, it is. It's pathetic. And there are real world reasons why that happened. First of all, in bankruptcies, and I mean, it had happened to Polaroid workers.
Yeah,
it happened
but
to Singer workers.
Blanket shit.
But all of, no, all of these no, it's the bankruptcy code that allows. We have to understand first, Todd, that deferred compensation, i.e., pensions,
Pensions are money that already belongs to the worker. It's not a kind-hearted gift from the goddamn company.
I know that. You know I'm a union guy.
I know you know that.
I don't understand how they
And so a bank, well, how they can do it? Because that's how the bankruptcy laws are written.
Well, that's fucked up.
Your Honor, we've got some money that we promised we would pay the workers later, but we want to steal it instead and give it away as bonuses to the executive class. Is that okay? And the bankruptcy judge goes, let me see here. Okay, it's we got section 622, subparagraph 3, subparen 1, 3 little I. Yeah, you can steal their money.
Yeah, it's right here in the books. Yep, you're allowed. Go ahead.
And it's the same thing with the health care. Of course, we wouldn't be having the problem with minors' health care that we have if we had done what most developed nations did a long goddamn time ago and had universal single-payer health care. Then coal workers wouldn't have to fight for their own, because, see, they're fighting for something they, by God, earned because they, by God, paid for it. And, you know, if other people don't have health care, well, fuck them. They weren't coal miners, okay? And so it's a goddamn shame, but at the same time it's a brilliant example of who was the capitalist Gould, was it, who said I can pay half the working class to kill the other half of the working class?
I remember that quote. Yeah.
And so and my heart breaks for him. But by the same token, somewhere along the way, we got to have a grown-up conversation.
But see, that is so. I understand it's legal, just like this bullshit with the gray area between emoluments and Trump and the Cheeto, orange Cheeto, disgusting mentally. That's the thing. You can be a fascist all you want, but a mentally ill fascist. Oh my God. So anyway. Between that and what he's doing, and like his all right, I'm gonna turn everything over to my kids, but his daughter is sitting in on all the sessions. Now, what the fuck? How stupid! But these people don't, like you said, they don't care. I'm like freaking out. I'm like, what? I mean, what part of this do you not understand? How do you? I mean, let me give you the, you know, just here I can put what fascism is on half a fucking 3x5 card. Not only that, this is what I don't understand. I mean, I figured the dude would win. Just it was disgusting because it was just so many pluses in his column and so many negatives on hers. But when we get down to the Electoral College, see, those votes were supposed to be locked in. It's supposed to be like a gimme, like you know what's going to happen. Okay? And if it doesn't match up, it's supposed to be like a little fight. Okay, so at what point did things not measure up? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Because, and I didn't get to say this on Friday because there was so much going on, and there's always so much going on now. But it frightens me, and it's disturbing, when you read the Constitution about why the Electoral College was, I mean, aside from the racial issues, which is really the crux of it, but aside from that, when you read what the Electoral College's duty is, the parameters of their how they make their decisions, it is like, oh, this was made for this fascist guy. Oh, my God. Checkbox. Oh, checkbox. Oh, checkbox. Oh, sorry. Do not pass go. I'm sorry, you're not qualified. You can't do this. Am I making any sense here?
No, you are. You absolutely are.
How did they drop the ball on that?
Because they wanted to?
I mean, seriously, we're in a fucking mess. And when you read the bylaws of, I don't even know if that's the right term, but you know what I'm talking about. It's the guidelines, right?
Yeah.
I wish I had them in front of me. But it reads just like what a fascist guy is.
Yeah, yeah.
So
there's an argument to be made. I mean, I know a lot of people are talking about secession in California and things like that. But the discussion was had at the time of the framing of the Constitution. Would a nation made up of 13 independent sovereign states be too big and unwieldy to govern? Can a republic be big? I mean, they had serious discussions about it, and I'm beginning to wonder, because, well, I mean, listen, you know, the Sessions is the world. God knows how many times that man stood up in the well of the Senate and said, our problem here is big government. When in point of fact, if you're going to govern a big nation, you better, by God, have a big government to do it.
We can't
hold a goddamn election, Todd.
No.
Because we've got 55 separate little elections going on in 55 separate petty cities, states.
That seems unfair prima facie, doesn't it?
Well, sure it is. Federal elections should be federally run under federal law.
On the face of it. It doesn't even
You know what? You want to declare what kind of photo ID is acceptable for your goddamn dog catcher election in Busted Knuckle, Wyoming? Have at it. It still has to meet constitutional muster, but have at it. But by God, in a federal election, the federal government should be able to say what qualifies as sufficient proof of the right to vote.
Well,
you know, one of the things that should happen is that there should be a federal law lifting the ban on felons voting.
Federally, right, exactly. Yep.
That ain't going to get through this Congress. Hey, let me interrupt for just 1 minute, because Robert in Australia very kindly offered a $100 challenge about an hour and 15 minutes ago, and he said there was an hour on it. And
I meant to mention that. Yeah, that was beautiful.
Well, and in the meantime, we made some headway on it, but not all of the headway. Matt in San Francisco said, in regard to the music from A Chorus Line, show tunes, my favorite bumper music ever. Some stereotypes are true. Put me down for $10. And Jug of Punch jumped in for $10. And Glenn jumped in. And so, consequently, we are at $40 out of the 100 needed to meet the matching challenge.
So we need 60.
Need 60. 6 at 10, 10 at, 10 at 6, et cetera, et cetera. But,
in the minutes
but Robert makes clear, he said, I'm going to extend this for the remainder of the program, but after that, all bets are off.
Robert, everyone thanks you.
Absolutely. So we got 40 minutes to raise $60.
I think we can do it, because I heard last week, you guys, we did it, you know, folks came through.
Oh, by the way, we're getting some hallelujahs coming from, well, it's not Wednesday, but hallelujahs coming from the congregation. Jen in Australia just said, oh my God, I've been saying this for years. So great to hear y'all say it. If you don't want a big government, stop being such a big country. Yeah, I don't know what these fools are about, but that's the thing. They're fools. Anytime I hear somebody say, we want small constitutional government, I'm at a point where I go, oh, look, a fool.
Mm-hmm.
How small? Because it's kind of like talking to the Israeli ambassador and never asking him about the $3 billion. our side lets these fools say, utter these stupid Heritage Foundation goddamn vomit phrases. Yeah, small government. And we never call them on it. We never look at them and go, okay, dumbass, how small do you want it to be? I mean, you do still want it to be big enough to make sure that your people get their Social Security checks, right? Because we don't just have one little old blue-haired lady up there signing fucking Social Security checks. And you would like it to be big enough, say, for the grants to go out to the police forces so they can, you know, shoot folks when they need a good killing. You want that, don't you? And you want your government to be big enough to maintain a military that's 10 times as large as the nearest military to it on the list in the world. You want the government to be... So, actually, you want a big government. It's just that there's some things about government you don't want to have because somebody might get something you don't want them to have. You know, those people.
Right.
And you can fill in the blank with whatever people it is those people are.
See? You know what? And it's like, you know what? Matter of fact, when you...
I mean, do you have any idea what would happen? Because I know you do. You know, we talk about food porn and everything. Do you have any idea what would happen to poor white America if the Republicans got the fondest little sticky wet dream came true and they got to kill off food stamps altogether? The SNAP program.
In the food desert? Oh, my God. It would be a mess.
I mean, no, but I mean, specifically, do you know what would happen to poor white America?
They'd die.
They would starve to death. And a lot of other people would starve with them.
And you know what? And let me give you a quick, because I had no health insurance, but luckily, I'm in good health, okay? I'm in fairly good health. And I live in the South, and they don't play that. No health insurance. Forget about it. But, you see, if you have no health insurance, your best hedge against getting sick is a good diet and exercise. And most things in the supermarket that you buy that are healthy are expensive. Fresh fruits, vegetables, juices.
Yeah.
Okay, juicing is one of the... You understand? And that shit is expensive.
Yeah, and forget about buying organic.
Oh, well, that's some boutique shit. Forget about that. Come on. What? Now, look, right, you know what? And it's amazing because I've always liked to cook. I cook from scratch. And that's what really gets me by. And I guess that's the way I grew up. I don't know. I just learned, you know, I don't buy what the factory stuff will get you.
No, you were the recipient. You were the recipient of the transmission of transgenerational wisdom. And because of the atomization of the American family, black, white, what is Hispanic, because we've been sprayed out in a fine mist all over this country, a lot of us have lost out on that. I can still set a corn pone. I know I talk about it all the time. I can still set one of those in the same way that it was done 150, 200 years ago by my ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology has not changed that much. I mean, the technology's changed, but the methodology hasn't. You
right.
know, somebody's going to have to teach you how to scald milk. Because there's a big damn difference between scalded milk and boiled milk.
Huge.
Well, there's a shit ton of people can't do that.
Oh my God, I freak out.
And
I had people over. I was shocked, man. There are so many people walk grown ass men do not know how to fucking cook. Even women, you know, they just buy boxes of stuff from the supermarket. Now I can understand folks who maybe don't have a stove or an oven, and that's different. But if you have the wherewithal to cook. And you weighing like 500 pounds and shit, and you're talking about your ankles hurt, you know, well.
Well, look, I mean, let me just give you an example. Since the derecho tore through here in 2012, we've not had a working stove. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Parts of it, but not all of it. And the wiring in this place is kind of sketchy.
Oh, I know about that.
80-year-old house, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
with the old fuses that look like a bottle cap?
No, I got a breaker box.
Okay.
I mean, no, I'm okay. I got a breaker box.
Okay.
But we got a convection oven and a microwave and a hot plate.
Right.
So, I think we're about to transition to some food porn, Todd.
I think that's a wonderful idea. So let me
So Christmas Christmas Eve, I went late, like 5 o'clock before everything, because they were shutting down at 6 at Kroger's. Because I knew I'd have a fighting chance of trolling for a roast.
Mm-hmm.
And I scored.
Mm. Really? Right before closing?
Yep.
Damn.
And so I got that little sucker. And the firebox part of my smoker rusted out a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I just used the big barrel part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I took that standing rib roast, not a big one, just a little guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I let it come to room temperature, rubbed it down with some canola oil, hit it mm-hmm. hit the fatty side with some coarse salt.
Mm-hmm.
Stuck a big old aluminum roasting pan underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
Built my fire, got my coals going, soaked my hickory.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Set the roast above the pan. Stuck my probe thermometer in it. Set it for 118 degrees.
Mm.
Poured my coals in, threw the hickory to it, closed the lid.
Mm.
And when the smoke would die down, and I could and you know, I could tell from the little temperature gauge on the I kept a chimney of coals going.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. when that thing when that thing dinged 118 degrees, pulled it off, brought it in, and then I got that drip pan.
That's what I'm talking about. You got some gravy out of that, didn't you?
No, sir. I got the 150-year-old iron skillet. I poured those pan drippings in it.
Mm-hmm.
I put it in the convection oven at 450 degrees.
Oh.
Till it smoked.
Oh.
Meantime, with 2 eggs and 7/8 of a cup of flour and a pinch of salt and a half a cup of milk, I had made a batter, whipped it real good. All room temperature, added a half a cup of water to it, got it nice and frothy and bubbly, pulled out that skillet, poured that batter into it, watched it woof, puff up, and had a deliriously beautiful Yorkshire pudding. But that standing rib, I've done them a whole lot of different ways. I figured I'd have to finish it on the gas grill. I didn't.
You did it just right. See,
that thing was the best I've ever made.
See, that's that iron skillet. You see, people don't understand. This, you got to have, if you can do it, go to a yard sale, whatever people have to do, acquire different sizes and different shapes of cast iron cookware. See, that held the heat.
And, you know, it was like 15 minutes at 400 and then another 20 minutes at 350. And golden, and you know, there's no yeast, there's no baking powder, no nothing.
Damn.
Oof.
You felt like a king, didn't you?
Oh, I did. Made homemade horseradish sauce.
Oh, the horseradish.
Crushed. It took my sour cream, worked in a bunch of dry mustard.
Mm.
And crushed a jar of drained capers.
Mm.
Folded them in, hit it with salt and fresh ground black pepper, and then the horseradish, and let it sit. Damn,
Bob. Making my dick hard, man. That's some shit.
Well, I mean, we call it food porn now, don't we? So it's your turn. So it's your turn now. Oh, by the way, we're making progress. Thank you very kindly to Chris up in Canada. We got $50 to go on Robert's challenge. So 28 minutes, $50.
You know what? Let me tell you, I've been bringing back some things from the 70s. And this is what I've been bringing back. I've been bringing back the classic club sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
Number one. Bacon. Smoked turkey, two kinds of cheeses, light mayo. I know Tracy doesn't like mayo, but
Tracy's gonna have to get over it. You can't have a club sandwich without mayo.
Can't. I mean, just and see, people have overdone the mayo. You know, too much is that. It has to be just enough. And then, if you really want to get crazy, you can, you know, take the honey mustard and mix it with the mayo, and then make a spread out of it, or racha, which. Is wonderful for spicy folks like us.
Yeah, I got to say this. I'm about with sriracha because it's been so goddamn commercialized. I'm about with sriracha where I am with white girl pumpkin spice.
Oh, the pumpkin spice. The pumpkin spice, they blew that shit up too fast. That shit, either pumpkin beer, the pumpkin this, the pumpkin that. I mean, come on.
I mean, I saw pumpkin cider.
Just what's wrong with good old mulled apples like Ziegler's? That's what I grew up on. Ziegler's apple cider, you know.
I mean, a pumpkin is. What's to make a cider out of? It's a pumpkin. It's a gourd cider. See, you say it like that, and suddenly it's not sexy anymore.
Not sexy. That's an anti-aphrodisiac. Come on. Look, you can overdo something, but this is the other thing I've been doing now. See, I've got these, I've got two cast iron, I've got one that's a flat griddle, covers two burners, you know, it's flat on one side, like in a deli. On the other side, it has ridges. Then I have a smaller one with a high lip on it that has the ridges. Okay. So what happens is that you can grill fish on it, grill chicken.
Nice.
Any kind of meat you want, and it puts the marks on it. Okay. Of course, I have to open up all the windows and everything else. My clothes will smell like, you know what, but everybody likes it, so I have to do it. And I love it. But, yeah, so I've all, you know, it's all, when you see the thing is, when you put that high heat on some of these seasonings, it's marvelous. So you get a nice, toasty onion roll, like from Kroger, right? Kroger has some good bread.
Does your Kroger have that kick-ass sourdough?
They do. Oh, man.
Because, see, I got a loaf of that for the beef leftovers. The horseradish sauce, some sliced cold roast beef, other slice of bread, done.
Oh, man. Horseradish was made for... And I'm not a big steak eater. I like steak once in a while, but when you have that nice thinly sliced roast beef and a nice horseradish sauce...
Well, that's
horseradish was made for that.
Right, and that's the other thing. I know a lot of people like their prime rib, you know, God damn it, I want an inch thick. Mm-mm.
No.
Electric knife, paper thin.
Paper thin. See, you know what? When I was working at that French, I worked a summer and a semester, saved some money at a French restaurant, and I was the third in charge. It was the chef, the sous chef, and me. And I was the fish guy. I was the poisson person. And they taught me a lot, I mean, about, like, putting the stock pot on. You know how long it takes to boil a stock pot? If you're fucking late, you fuck the whole restaurant up.
Oh, yeah.
You have to put that thing on as soon as you get in. So, but the reason I bring it up is that they don't throw anything away, and you learn about slicing good meat thinly, because what they do, you cook it rare, right, and then you plate it up, and then you put it on your broiler, and it's all fanned out, nice presentation, you know, and that's why you're paying like, you know, $35-$40 for a plate of food. But you know, it's a lot of courses. You know, it's not like damn buffet where you just pile shit up like a glutton. You know, it's not like that. But when you slice the meat, especially good meat, any meat, it tastes so much better like I say, a quarter inch is fat enough. No larger than a quarter. No.
Oh, I was going. I was the other night. I was going for read through it thin.
See, that's even better. See, that's why you have the electric knife, right? And that's the other thing. You must have sharp knives. But you know, some folks just aren't interested in cooking. I've come to conclude that. But you know, you have it's like art, I guess, in a way. But a lot of folks like the end result. Okay, so right now I've had this meat. Oh, I've had the dry rub on it. I've got the skillet going right now, and I've got the doors open. And there's no robbers in the neighborhood at this point. They've all been locked up. So I can have the doors open, and I'm about to drop this meat on here. It's going to have the grill marks, and it's going to smell amazing. Now, my dog is outside, because when I start cooking, that dog is greedy. And you never hear her on the phone. My dog is amazing. That dog has a brain over him. She knows when she's supposed to talk. It's amazing. It's all about, you know, a lot of it is about interest and about cookware and about seasoning. You need, you know, that good coarse salt like you were talking about. And then you can, at some point, you can make your own seasoning. You know, it's a mixture. Like, if you want a good rub, a lot of it, you know, chili powder. And mole. Have you ever used a mole?
I don't think so.
It's like a Mexican chili paste.
Yeah. That's a Nahuatl word that just means mixture.
It's a mix, right? And you know, and
a guacamole. It's a mixture of avocados.
Right. And you know, it sounds counterintuitive, but you know, a little. If you can get the cocoa unsweetened cocoa powder, just a little bit. And just a little bit of cinnamon is amazing on meat. Just a little bit. And you know, it's like chemistry. Too much of one thing, not enough of the other. Shit won't work right. But, you know, there it is. Oh, man.
Oh, that was that. Yeah. Yeah, that was the money sound.
Did you hear that?
I got that.
So this is going to be delicious. Now, what's going to happen? I've got the boneless chicken on here now, right? And what's going to happen? I already fed the old people. So I'm going to have two slices of thick sliced hickory smoked bacon and probably some pepper jack cheese on top of that on an onion roll. So that's the second thing I'm bringing back is a homemade, like a grilled chicken breast sandwich. No, it's not breaded. I like bread, but you know, you can't be breaded all the time. And the beauty of the non-breaded chicken is that what can happen is that you get a nice tray of chicken and you get some plastic bags or whatever you have that's available. Season it up, wrap it up, and put it in the refrigerator and just let it sit. And listen, people forget about teriyaki. Now, you cannot go wrong if you grill some teriyaki chicken. People will think you're a master.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
All right. And so we had, oh my God, for Christmas, we had lamb, we had pork loin, we had grilled chicken breast, we had two kinds of rice, we had wild rice, and we had Caribbean rice, peach cobbler.
You ever do any of that wonderful Gullah red rice and yellow rice?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
I love red rice.
Isn't that great? You know, people, I don't know why they some folks poo-poo about the rice and beans. Rice and beans is good.
Yes, it
you know,
is.
I mean, legumes are good for us. We're supposed to be eating that. Black bean, especially, you know, and I have a wonderful recipe for black bean soup. And I'll be honest with you, man. You know, women love when you cook for them. You come by and you've got a nice meal made, you can't go wrong. I'm just saying. One day when my girlfriend's over here, I'm going to put her on the phone, man. She's in communications. Seriously, she's in communications, and she does news and stuff like that. And she sounds as good as she looks. But anyway, I just hope that that folks can enjoy good food and wake up, because
Well, you know, I think taking...
I don't know what's going to happen.
I think taking our enjoyment where we can find it. And I read an essay about this earlier today. I read it over at, what's the name of the... Counterpunch. Mm-hmm. And some of it I agreed with, some of it I didn't. But, you know, I don't go to media for bias confirmation. I go to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one passage in this this piece where he talked about, folks saying, well, you know, I'm going to leave the country. And he didn't have much for that.
Mm-hmm.
But he also talked about, you know, there's an impulse to just to simply withdraw into human pleasures, keep our heads down, and try to just get by. And he said that's wrong too.
If everybody did that, we wouldn't get
anywhere. And what he said is, you know, my takeaway from it was, you know, go ahead and do that. Indulge in the simple human pleasurable things, but let them fortify you to be strong enough for the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Because the struggle will not be easy. You know, a little while ago I said, I don't know what the next 4 years are going to look like. I got a note from Scott and Punky. And he said, we're apparently about to embark upon some kind of reverse Beverly Hillbillies dynamic here. The Trumps are the Clampets. The rest of us are banker Milburn Drysdale and his wife Margaret. Appalled, dismayed, shocked, confused, and amazed as the rusty, wired-together 1921 Oldsmobile Model 46 Roadster comes rattling through the ornate wrought iron gates and wheezes along up the long, beautifully landscaped driveway. And I think there's some truth in that. I mean, we all remember Sidney Poitier in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, and of course Spencer Tracy.
Right.
And this is a billion times past that. And
it doesn't shit.
We've got to be fortified against it. Chris in Germany sent a couple of things over the holidays. She sent some German holiday fruity, and you use a tea ball, and it's like herbal, fruity, spicy, and it was just wonderful with a little bit of honey in it. And
and
she sent the herbs for something, a bag of herbs for something that the Germans called Glühwein, which I think is glowing wine. But you take a nice red wine. And you mull it with these spices, and it's just heavenly. And I'm not trying to foist my habits or my preferences off on anybody. Take your joy how you find it. But for God's sakes, we've got to have some. Because what's coming at us may be some very goddamn grim business. And yep. So if there's a little bit of pleasure to be had here and there, you know, this is not eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die. This is eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we march on. Tomorrow the struggle continues. And people who have gotten together in camaraderie and collegiality and good spirit, those people are going to be better able to press that struggle than people in isolation. And I think we need to work against that isolation. You know, one of the things about the Horn Todd is it came into being because I thought that we needed more places where people of goodwill, progressives, liberals, what have you, could gather and not be shouted down by a bunch of barbaric poo-flinging right-wing POSs. Oh, by the way, I just got a note from Steve from Georgia saying, "Stop telling us how to cook, Bob!" It's been a while since I've had a stop telling us how to, so thank you. Thank you, Steve. Wait a minute. Yeah. And now, with what's coming at us, that operating philosophy that got all this started is doubly or perhaps trebly more applicable. And so if we gather together and we talk about the news of the day, or we talk about our outrage or our disgust, or sometimes just our slack-jawed amazement at just how crooked some people can be, then that's okay. But sometimes sometimes we'll talk about the proper treatment of a skinless chicken breast, or what to do with that manager's special little standing rib roast.
That's what I'm saying. Little things in life. Exactly. Exactly. I bought this chicken manager special, but you have to know what to do with it. As soon as you get home, you season it, and what you're not going to eat that day, you freeze it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it's going to happen in 2 or 3 days, there's always the Ziploc bag and the buttermilk.
And the buttermilk. And like you said, we have to fortify and be ready for the next battle. See, because if you're not fortified, you won't have the strength. And my God, we have to eat, because these fools are they're starting to eat themselves already. So all we have to do is fortify and be ready, because it's going to be our turn again soon. They have just bitten off too much. This is not going to work. I mean, they overreach. Overreach. And the fascist guy is not looking that healthy. Like you said, I was looking at him. No. He is not looking healthy at all. Period.
Real quick, we've got, I think this is important. Steve in China just wrote and said, food porn, throw a handful of fresh rinsed alfalfa sprouts on some of those delicious sandwich combinations, and you've got the simplest approach to perfection. Over here, the Chinese table is so chock full of spice and heat, it tends to get overwhelming at times, but don't forget the green stuff. They love their meat, but always tell me not to eat it out of proportion to fruits and vegetables. Everything comes down to harmony in a culture where the joy of eating is king. And, you know, a lot of culture, that's absolutely true. You know, even the ancient Greeks said, all things in moderation and nothing to excess.
I totally agree with him. And I'm going to tell you this one thing, and I know we have to go, but something I got into late in life, very late. I always like soup. I like soup. And soup is nourishing because your body doesn't have to work that hard to digest it. But, you know, when you go to a nice Japanese restaurant, they have something called a miso soup, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
And the secret is to get the taste. So when I'm able, and it's not cheap, but, you know, it lasts a while. And if you can teach yourself to make nice miso soup, it is amazing. And you get your fresh vegetables in there, and you have a nice salad. And, back to Trader Joe's again. We're talking about Trader Joe's in there. How about Trader Joe's has some of the best produce. Kroger's produce is pretty good, and Publix is good. I don't know if you have Publix up there, but
no, sadly, I'd like to, but we don't.
I have the greens. You know, what I mean, there's no way around that. But that's why I was talking about juices, like the Green Goddess. It's just, you got to have balance. I mean, balance and everything. But miso soup, I think some people don't like soup, but to me, miso soup has just an outstanding flavor. It might be an acquired taste to some people because it's a little
fishy,
tart and sweet. It's it's unique. It's wonderful and it's unique and it's very healthy because.
But I tell you what, I love it, and I love that broth in the Japanese restaurants we've had around here, what few there are. There's this one dish they do with lightly breaded, really firm tofu that they deep fry, and then they float it in some miso broth. Oh, yeah.
That's part of it. Right.
Yeah. These are like big cubes, and they call it agé tofu. Oh God, I love that stuff. Hey, good news, Todd.
We are over the top.
We are over the top on Robert's challenge.
Beautiful.
And thanks very kindly to Fab for jumping in there and knocking down that and finishing off fundraising for tomorrow. So, you know, I can sort of, in good conscience, go and throw my blanket over my head, put my hands over my eyes, and peer through the cracks between my my second and third fingers to see how long it takes before the Mountaineers are down 52 to the Canes.
I think you deserve it, and I think you need to do that. I really do. I really do. I think that's a great thing.
Well, I'm a goner. I'm a goner, damn it. I'm a goner.
You do.
But this has been a great conversation. Absolutely a wonderful conversation. And we didn't even get around to sort of dissecting South Carolina politics, which I kind of would have liked to have done. But we'll do that on another occasion. And somewhere along the way, you need to meet Eric, and Eric needs to meet you.
I would love to meet Eric.
I think y'all might be buddies. He's, you know, he's in Columbia, and you're not.
Right, and that's only 30. You know, that's why I have to go to Trader Joe's. So I think that's a must, absolutely. Because I was listening intently last night, and Bob, thank you. You've given me some emotional and intellectual nourishment tonight, and I wish I could share this food with the rest of the family because this is looking so good. Oh my God, it smells so good in here. Boy.
The food porn has wreaked havoc. Just got a note from Gerald. I really need a sandwich and a beer this weekend. I think we'll have to try to make that happen.
That's an American type of thing to say, and we're real Americans. How about that?
Yeah, and that's sandwich, by the way, SAMMICH, in case you're wondering.
Bob, man, I really, you know, boy, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, look, Todd, it's a delight and an absolute joy. And by the way, it's also the heart and soul of what Conversation Radio is all about because, see, you and I can do this. And can you imagine if, in the time that we've been talking, can you imagine what it would be like if every 7 minutes I had to say, well, hold on, Todd, hang on to that thought, because we're going to run 6 minutes of commercials now.
Wouldn't work.
No, it wouldn't work. Pardon me, but I think that's what makes that's what makes this special. I mean, we've been all over the place. We've been culture, we've been history, we've been... We've been genetics, we've been politics, we've been international, we've been national, we've been local. Tell me anywhere else this happens. It don't happen on Washington Journal.
Oh my God, no. You have to be ready for that. That's different. That's a whole different ballgame. I mean, I do it out of necessity just so I can, because of where I live. I have to, you know, remember that I'm around weirdos. You know, they look all normal. But when I go to the supermarket, I'm thinking this guy's got a gun on him, and this guy's thinking this, and this person's thinking that, and, you know. I mean, it's America. It's a big place. But, you know, there's a lot of uninformed people out here who are dangerous. So...
yeah.
But that's another conversation, my friend.
Well, it is, and we may have it yet. You're kind of making me think I want to go throw some leftover roast beef on a couple of slabs of sourdough.
You know how to do it. Sweat the onions, sweat the peppers. At the last minute, put the garlic in, put the meat on, in the pan, a little cast iron skillet, put the cheese on top, put it on the wall.
Ta-da.
Wait a minute. By the way, you got me motivated. I'm gonna fire up the grill the next dry day.
Oh,
rain today.
Uh oh.
Because I'm gonna tell you what happened. I got the last burger out yesterday. that, you know, because that's my thing now, because I don't have to stand out there. And if I don't have a lot of beer, I got to get motivated to stand by the grill. I'm just being honest. So look, I'm doing the burgers because they're quick and they taste wonderful with that pecan wood. And when you freeze them up, okay, you wrap them. I have this nice box of wax paper, freeze them up, tight container. And then when you warm them up, they still have that fresh grilled taste. It's amazing. It is fucking amazing.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. Yes. It tastes like I just got the shit off the grill.
Whoa. I would never have thought to do it. No. That's beautiful.
I'm telling you. It is beautiful.
With a good bun.
With a good bun. Has to have a good bun. Oh, yeah. Gotta have a good bun. Well, you know, the best to your family and the Horn family, and thank you. Was it Steve that had the challenge?
No, that was Robert in Australia. Thank you, and thank you, Robert, for extending it past the hour to the end of the program. Because of that, we made it. And thanks to everybody who responded to it. No hole, good to go for tomorrow, and I'm thrilled.
I wish I could feed everyone right now. I really do.
Well, one of these days, you know, we'll all buy our lottery tickets, and one of these days we will have the damn horn in, Todd.
Oh.
Yeah, wouldn't that
I know be, Tracy would be burning that stuff up.
Wouldn't that be some fun? Wouldn't that be some fun?
Oh, I love it.
Well, Todd, you have yourself a great evening. Thanks again, and we will talk soon.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for everything.
Later, my friend. Bye now.
Hurry.
The one and only Todd in South Carolina, Stan. As Steve from Georgia, Stan, just told me, it's time to take it to the barn, Bob. And we are headed that way. Thank you, one and all, everybody who kicked in to make the fundraising happening this evening. Thank you so very much. So it's official. I'm taking tomorrow night off. You know, and unless I get to like 5 minutes before kickoff, and, you know, Dana Holgorsen just says, you know, we're just going to concede the game, then I'll be here. But other than that, I'm taking the night off tomorrow night. I haven't actually taken a night off in a very, very long time. So I'll do that, and we'll be back at it for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Does that work out? Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you very kindly. Sparky, longtime moderator in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.